Available now from Graphic Audio.
Giants, including the biggest and ugliest of those big and ugly brutes I have ever seen. Mayer Dek is called. And even the Powrys, even Koskosio Begulne himself, gives him great respect. His armor is special, I fear, perhaps even magical, for it seems almost to have an inner fire.
Feel me! This is only one human! One puny human! 100 pieces of king's gold, and 10 prisoners to the one that brings me the head of Nightbird!
You believe this to be a game? Tell me where she is!
You're a wretch!
You're calling yourselves men of God, but no good God would approve of your works. You took from me, you thieving wretch, and for that I'll see you pay!
Who's there?
You knew we would come for you.
Your Markwart is an evil man. I call on you now, in the name of the solemn vow of our order, piety, dignity, poverty, to turn against this evil course, to find again the light.
Don't miss Demon Wars Saga Book 2, The Demon Spirit Part 2. Available now from Graphic Audio.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
I have orders to separate you from the regular space service as of today.
What? What's going on?
Fleet has no place for your kind.
So, you're the one who killed Admiral Lepescu.
Actually, I didn't shoot him myself.
Take him to the brig!
Graphic Audio presents The Serrano Legacy by Elizabeth Moon.
This is Serrano. We've located a hull breach in number 4.
No! Don't!
Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Peter Stray, Tim Gatman, Elizabeth Demery, Kate Foster, Eric Messner, Michael Glenn, Mort Shelby, Sonny Lasky, Lily Beacon, Terrence Aselford, Michael John Casey, James Lewis, Richard Rowan, Christopher Graybill, Margie Tompros, Dylan Lynch, Jonathan Watkins, Ken Jackson, Joe Brack, Tim Carlin, James Konacek, Tony Nam, Casey Platt, Andy Clements, Thomas Penny, Tom Simpson, Jason Stiles, Scott McCormick, Ren Casey, Elizabeth Jernigan, M.B. Van Dorn, Johan Detweiler, Amanda Thickpenny, and Lily David. Book 7, Against the Odds, Part 1.
A cold wind swept the barren top of Stack 2. Ensign Margue Pardalt's eyes ached from squinting into it. Broad daylight now. The wind had long since swept away the bitter stench of the seaplane fires.
Where are the mutineers? Did the message I tried to send using the old technology actually reach anyone? Or will the mutineers get away with their whole plan? And when will they come? When will they come to kill me?
Oh, this is stupid.
Bundled in his yellow leather jacket over his personal protective unit, with a peculiar gray furry hat on his head, Professor Gustav Ederson looked more like a tubby vagrant than a brilliant scientist.
When I was a boy, I used to imagine things like this, being marooned on an island and having to figure out a way to get home. I had thousands of plans, each one crazier than the one before. Make a boat out of my grandmother's porch swing, make an airplane out of the solar collector, take the juicer and a skein of yarn, 2 cups and a knitting needle, and make a communications device.
Margue wondered whether to say anything. She couldn't feel her ears anymore.
Sir, don't you think we should go back inside?
Ederson didn't move.
Probably.
He gave a last look at the blackened stain that had been their transport. Then he looked at Margue, and his mouth quirked in a mischievous grin.
There's only one thing to do when the bad guys have all the transport.
Sir?
Make them give it to us.
He headed inside so abruptly that Margue was left behind. She caught up with the professor as he went in the door.
Make them...
It's a desperate chance, but by God, it'll be fun if it works.
He looked around the room at the scientists and military personnel who were also stranded.
Listen, I have an idea.
You always have an idea, Gussie. You probably want us to make an airplane out of bed springs or something.
No, I thought of that, but we don't have enough bed springs. I want the mutineers to bring us an airplane and give it to us.
What?
The professor launched into an enthusiastic explanation. In the few seconds from outside to inside, his idea had already developed elaborate additions. The others looked blank.
Yeah. The only way to get transportation is to get them to give it to us. But it's not going to be easy. They've got a lot more troops topside than we have. They can scorch us with the shuttle weaponry for that matter.
So, our first job is to convince them we're not dangerous.
Do they even know how many of us there were? They don't know the planes were full, do they? Vinet didn't get any messages up to them.
No, that's right. And except during the firefight last night, we've been mostly undercover. But they'd be stupid to come in carelessly. Never count on the enemy to be careless.
But suppose, using Margue's radio apparatus, we give them what looks like accidental clues. We try to contact them, pretending to be mutineers fighting with scientists.
No, wait. Look, they know the Loyalists have the radio now. Suppose we send a message, like we hope it'll bounce around to the mainland begging for help, and then break off. And then an hour or so later, there's a message to them from some of the military pretending to be mutineers, and then...
How would the mutineers know how to use the equipment? It's nothing fleet-trained people would know unless they happened on it somewhere else, like Ensign Pardoll. And besides, it's too fragile. It could get shot up in a firefight.
Suppose we say the radio's the Loyalists, and we're begging for help from the mainland, like he said. But of course, it doesn't come. We sound more and more desperate. We talk about being hunted by the mutineers, about the people killed in the explosions of the planes, and the food shortages. The mutineers have all the supplies.
Yes! Oh, that's good. And we'll move the thing around, so when they trace the signal, they'll know someone's trying to stay in hiding. And then, we'll take it underground.
We'll need a visible force of baddies. A squad will do for that. Local uniforms. And PPUs can look like anything with the right setting. We've got the suit comms for local communication. Have to have our people stay in character.
So, what are we going to do if we get the shuttle? They can always shoot us down before we get anywhere.
Not that easy if they come down with one of the combat troop shuttles, sir. They're hardened and highly maneuverable.
Which brings up, who's going to fly it?
Well, I'm shuttle qualified. Kent's not, but Bernie is.
If you're qualified to fly troop shuttles, why are you on seaplanes down here?
Well, fleet has a lot more shuttle pilots than seaplane pilots. Only a few of us mess around with the old-fashioned stuff.
Bob, what about Zed?
On a shuttle? LAC size? No problem, Gussie. It'll fit, and we can use it. Like I said, it'd hide something the size of this island, let alone a shuttle.
Then, Major, if you'll divide us into loyalists and mutineers, giving me the tech-trained people, and set up a scenario for us to act...
We'll have to do something about those bodies.
Garson gestured to some of the men. Margue had never had close contact with scientists before this, and if she'd thought about them at all, she'd had a story cube image of vast intelligence applied step by step to some arcane problem. They would be solitary, so they could concentrate. They would be serious, sober, abstracted. They would not, for instance, waste any moment of their precious preparation time playing some inconceivable game that involved a sing-song chant, puns, and childish insults, dissolving into laughter every few seconds.
Oh, your starfish eats dirt.
Oh, that's old, Gussie.